at first, the process of generating this aspiration for full enlightenment may seem a little artificial. As we go, what in the world is full enlightenment? What in the world is Buddhahood? You know, is it possible? Do I really want that? Okay, and there can be, you know, quite a bit of doubt. So I think it's important to kind of explore this and, you know, have an idea of where we're going and why we're going there. Because right now we may feel, well, you know, I'm just little old me. And we were often brought up with the thought or even the feeling that, yeah, okay, we have some faults. We might be able to improve them a little bit, but not a whole lot. And, well, I just am an angry kind of person, so that's the way it is. Everybody better put up with me. Or we might think, enlightenment? No. Impossible. I can't even remember my times tables. What are you talking about being omniscient? Okay. So I think it's important to recognize that the fundamental nature of our mind is clear. Okay? Mind is the definition of mind is clear and knowing. Okay? So it's just the ability to perceive objects. Ability to relate and cognize objects. And when there aren't impediments to that cognition, then the mind can cognize what's ever there. When the mind's covered and clouded, then there's obstruction. Okay. So what we're trying to do is remove a lot of the internal obstructions to knowing all phenomena, these internal obstructions principally being the mental afflictions, ignorance, anger, attachment, pride, jealousy, resentment, laziness, grudges, spite, lack of consideration for others. Do you want me to keep going? You know, we have all these things, don't we? You know? So these things are obscuring our mind. They're like clouds covering the pure nature of the sky. But the sky always remains pure, clean, empty, even though the clouds are there. They cover it temporarily. So similarly, the nature of our mind is just clarity and awareness. And the clouds of these afflictions and the karma that's generated by them obscure it temporarily. So the reason that we practice the Dharma is to eliminate all of these obscurations, because when, as they're eliminated, the mind becomes more and more able to perceive what's there. So that's why we practice the Dharma, to purify the mind and also to develop its ability to perceive things. And not just the mind's ability to perceive things, but to develop an attitude of love and compassion and a healthy way of relating to other living beings. Okay, because we can be wise, but if we don't have a lot of love and compassion, we're going to be kind of stuck, aren't we? So we do a lot of meditation on what's called the method side of the path to develop love and compassion and a healthy way of relating to other beings. Okay, we aren't inherently selfish. We just have a long pattern of thinking about ourselves first. But it can be reversed. Okay, just as we've have a lot of conditioning, thinking me, 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 what about me, I want, give me, yeah, then we can similarly recondition ourselves to think of the welfare of others. So we do this by, first of all, remembering that all living beings are like us in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Okay, we know that up here already, don't we? Do we live that way from here? No. Yeah. We know up here, oh yes, everybody wants to be happy and be free of suffering. How do we live our life?
Me first. Get rid of my suffering first. Give me happiness first. Then we'll think about other people.
Okay. So we just have a long habit with that. The more we spend time really thinking about how others are exactly like us, the more that the mind, you know, becomes aware of that. And then naturally our mind starts to shift to think of the welfare of others. In addition, when we think of the kindness that others have shown us, we begin to see others as lovable. And then again, spontaneously, the mind starts to care about them because we realize that all of our happiness depends on them. Now, until now, we've developed the idea very well that all of our suffering depends on them. Okay, so we're very good at blaming others. Yeah, no problem with that. Is there anybody have a problem blaming others? No, I mean, we don't need to come to a Dharma class to know how to blame others. We do it, right? Spontaneous, even in our dreams. Yeah. But when we start to recognize how interdependent we are and how all of our happiness comes from others, then we start to care more about them and we stop blaming them because we realize, okay, you know, they may have been the cooperative causes in some of our suffering, but actually all of our happiness is dependent upon them. Now, initially this sounds a little bit un-American, because we were raised with the idea of, you know, pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, you know, all that kind of stuff. And this is my life. If I have enough money, I pay for it, you must give it to me. So we feel like, you know, there's a me and I can demand from the world. But in actual fact, when we think of it, that's not how we live in relationship to other living beings or to the world in general. Think about it this way. When you were born, okay, when we were born, we were really broke. Okay, you think you have financial problems now? When we were born, not a penny to our name. Yeah, no insurance, no job, no food stamps, nothing. Okay, we didn't have any clothes, we didn't have any food. Okay. We didn't have anything when we were born. It's true, isn't it? Yeah? We had zero.
No credit.
Pardon?
No credit cards.
Yeah, definitely no credit cards. Yeah. So, absolutely nothing. Look at how much we have now. If you think about, just think about, not just how much you have now, but how much you've had your whole life. What you had when you were a kid, as a teenager, as a young adult, all the different things you had, all the different things you used, how much money you've had and then spent or whatever. Where did all of that come from? Came from others, didn't it? We weren't born with it. It all came from others. Now, one part of our mind is going to say, but I deserved it. I worked. Okay, we might have worked, but still, the money came from others, didn't it? Still, it came from others. What about our knowledge? We can sometimes be quite snotty about our knowledge, can't we? I know this. I know that. I'm a great artist. I'm a great musician. I'm a great techie. Okay. I'm a great this and that and the other thing. We can become, you know, really quite conceited about our talents and our knowledge. Yet where did all of that come from? When we were little, we didn't even know how to read and write. We couldn't even pick up a pencil.
We didn't know anything. So everything that we know also has come to us from others. All started out with maybe our mom and dad or siblings or other relatives holding us and going goo goo gaga and teaching us how to speak. Okay, and they taught us how to tie our shoes. They potty trained us. Talk about great kindness. I mean, imagine where we would be if nobody potty trained us. Really have to say thank you to them for that. When we start to look at, you know, everything we know how to do, it all came from others. Whatever aptitude we have would have gone untouched and unused if it hadn't been for others who taught us how to make use of whatever aptitudes or talents we had. So when we look at our life that way and see how completely dependent we are on others, we really get a sense of how kind they've been. When we look around at all the things we use, again, we see that we've been the recipient of so much kindness. I mean, here's a bottle of water. Do we know who made the bottle? Do we know what the conditions of working at the spring were like? Do we know the people who drove the truck that moved the water here? Are the people who stocked the supermarket shelf? Now, there were so many beings involved in just getting a bottle of water. And these are mostly strangers. People we don't know that do their various jobs in society that we benefit from. And do we ever really become aware of that, how dependent we are on these people? You go to the supermarket, do you ever thank the people who are stocking the shelves or working at the checkout counter? When you drive by a construction site on the highway, on a road, do you stop and thank them for making the roads that we drive on? Okay. What about the garbage collectors? These people are really important. I was in Tel Aviv once when the garbage collectors were on strike. You don't want to be in a city without garbage collectors. But don't we take them for granted? And yet, our life really depends on garbage collectors. Okay. So as we look around, there's so many different jobs that people do, so many different things that are going on. And we're dependent on all these people, most of whom we don't know. And they're the ones who make everything happen, and we just kind of walk in and enjoy it all. So it's actually quite a wonderful meditation just to spend some time and think about how dependent our life is on others, how much we've been the recipient of kindness from other living beings. It's a slant on life that we usually have never taken, that we just ignore. And because we ignore it, that's why we feel alienated from others. We feel like we can't communicate, or we feel cut off, we feel lonely. But when we really spend some time thinking of how much we've received from others, we don't feel lonely and cut off anymore. And we recognize that actually we can communicate with any living being because we're all alike. So if we just kind of look beyond the superficial appearances of, you know, what race or nationality or ethnicity or gender or sexual orientation or political party or socioeconomic group or educational level or age or weight or hair color, whatever, all these superficial things that we use to judge other people.
if we look beyond that into people's hearts, we really see that they're exactly like us and that they've been incredibly kind to us. And then through that, you know, there's a feeling of real connection with other people, even with animals and insects. And when there's that feeling of connection, then we feel very much at ease and we are actually able to connect with others. Okay? So developing this feeling, this awareness, really depends on spending some time thinking about this interconnection, how much we've received. And especially here in America, where we've learned since we've been so little to blame others for our suffering. We start off blaming our family, don't we? Yeah? It's the first people that we pick on are our family, ever since Freud. Yeah. Then you grow into a teenager and you have to blame your parents for your problems. But I think that's really unfair. And I think this habit we have of blaming our parents for our problems actually impedes our own growth. Because often our parents are the ones on whom our life has depended the most. And if we just focus on a few things they did that we didn't appreciate, but we forget all the wonderful things that they did for us, then we're really seeing them in a very lopsided way. And then we continue going through our life seeing everybody else in such a lopsided way. I think, you know, there's a whole meditation in Buddhism where we contemplate the kindness of our parents and then realize that all living beings have been our parents. Very often, Westerners, we don't like this meditation. I contemplate the kindness of my parents. They haven't been kind to me. You know, they abused me and they made fun of me and they didn't give me the education I wanted. They kicked me out of the house and they did this when I was 3 years old and that when I was 4 years old and that when I was 5 years old. And that's why I'm so screwed up. How do you ever heal? How do you ever grow up if you go through life with this kind of resentment? Okay, we put ourselves in prison if we hold on to that kind of attitude. Whereas if, you know, we're able to really think, you know, our parents gave us life. What a wonderful thing. Everything else we have is because our parents gave us life. And they did take care of us in one way or another because we're still alive. Even if they weren't the ones who were able to take care of us, maybe they had to work, but they found somebody who took care of us. Because if nobody had taken care of us as infants, we would have died. It's true, isn't it? I mean, we couldn't care for ourselves when we were infants. So even if our parents couldn't do it themselves, they arranged for somebody else to. And that's why we're still alive now. I think, you know, it's important. Start with our family. Think about their kindness. Then go to strangers. Even go to the people that we don't like and see how they've been kind to us as well. Now you're going to go, what? The people I don't like have been kind to me? Well, if you think about some of the most difficult things that you've gone through in your life, first of all, you've survived. Right? They didn't kill you. You're still here. Did you learn something from the difficulties you've gone through in your life? People may have betrayed trust. They may have swindled you. They may have done all sorts of things. Did you learn something from it? Did you find some resource inside yourself that you didn't know that you had so that you could deal with that difficulty? Did the situation force you to grow in a way that you wouldn't have grown otherwise? Okay.
when we look back on the difficulties that we've had in life, we see that actually in many ways they've served us quite well, that we came out stronger and often more compassionate from them. So looking at it that way, we have to think of the people who caused problems or who were involved in the problems. We have to look at them and say thank you, don't we? One of my teachers, Lama Yeshe, was a young monk in Sera Monastery when there was the uprising in Lhasa in 1959. And Lama went into the mountains behind Sera J Monastery with his teacup, with all the other monks, because no good Tibetan monk goes anywhere without their teacup. So they all went into the mountains when the uprising began, thinking, okay, there's an uprising, it'll cool down, we'll go back to the monastery in a few days. Well, they never made it back, because the uprising continued, His Holiness fled, and they wound up crossing the Himalaya Mountains in March under the gunfire of the Chinese communists shooting at them, going into exile in India. So going from the high altitudes of Tibet, where there's no disease, into the plains of India, where there's a lot of disease, being put in an old British POW camp. And Lama would tell us this story of you know, he and others escaped. And he said that becoming a refugee really made him understand what Dharma practice was all about. He said that if he had remained in Tibet, he probably would have become a very fat and lazy geshe. Gotten his geshe degree, you know, PhD in philosophical theories, taught people, received offerings, just gone on like that. But he said because he had to become a refugee, that his only refuge at that point was his spiritual practice, because that was what he had to use to deal with his mind. And so when he was telling the story to us, he put his hands together like this and he said, I really have to say thank you, Mao Zedong. Can you imagine that? Can you put your hands together and say, I have to say thank you to Osama bin Laden? Or I have to say thank you to George Bush? I don't know which one you have a harder time saying thank you to. Yeah. But can we do that? Can we do that in some way? Can we see benefit coming even from the times when things have happened that have been very harmful or made us quite unhappy? This way of thinking can be very, very useful, very important, and it completely shifts how we look at other living beings, shifts how we look at the world, shifts how we feel about other living beings. When you go, when you do this kind of meditation a lot, seeing the kindness of others, when you go in a room full of strangers, you don't feel nervous anymore. You feel like you're going in a room full of people who've been kind to you. Think about that. How many of you are nervous when you go in a place where you don't know anybody? Yeah. But when you really do this meditation, then we're able to drop that nervousness when we look at people. Oh, there's a sentient being who's contributed to my happiness. There's somebody on whom I depend to stay alive. When we're able to look at them and see them in beauty and see them as lovable, then our mind isn't going to think those thoughts, and so our speech and our actions towards them will definitely improve.